I'm just talking into this microphone because I naturally do it.
Hello, I'm Amy Mann.
And I'm Ted Leo.
And you are listening to The Art of Process. How's my level? You always have me really soft, so people have to pay attention to your voice more, just by sheer volume. What? Don't give me that look. It's a look that sears through the radio waves.
Are you done crunching yet?
I was just eating a very crunchy rice cracker, which is the best kind of podcast cracker.
It's better than a saltine because it doesn't dry your mouth out.
I once saw somebody at a party bet someone else that he couldn't eat a small stack of saltines.
Oh my.
Like in 10 seconds. There was like a time. It was like, I don't know, an inch and a half tall.
Oh, it wasn't a whole sleeve.
No, it was not a whole sleeve.
Right. Whew.
It wasn't a whole sleeve. It was like maybe an inch, you know, maybe 2 inches tall. It
that's a lot of saltines.
It was like a, you know, but you would definitely go, yeah, I could eat that.
Yeah.
Now, what happened was this person was annoying.
Okay.
And I think the person who bet the other person was tired of this person being annoying. And he knew that the guy would not be able to do it.
He had some saltine knowledge that...
I could have told this guy, when somebody bets you that you can't eat a stack of saltines, you should probably just acknowledge that there's a reason you can't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what happens is a certain amount of saltines will dry your mouth completely up.
Right.
And you will not be able to chew or swallow or talk, which I think might have been the point
right.
to the whole thing.
That's slick. Wow. I knew a person once who insisted that if you eat a saltine, have it in your mouth, and then take a sip of water, you get a flavor burst, as you would call it.
That is the, first of all, the term flavor burst with saltines is hardly...
No, like, I'm serious. You get a flavor burst.
What, a new flavor or more of the flavor of like a gluey, pasty salt glue?
I don't know. And I don't think he ever really expanded on what kind of flavor it was.
It's not going to be a new flavor.
Get a flavor burst. It's just a burst. You get a flavor burst.
That's really dumb. Plus, they're gluten-y. And you know me, I can't do the gluten.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's why we're having rice crackers. I like rice crackers, too. I was raised on rice crackers.
I mean, it's been over 15 years since I have not been able to eat gluten. So at this point, I'm like, hey, if it's starchy at all and it has some salt, bring it on.
You know, I had the opposite because I had celiac as a baby.
Wow.
And so
grew out of celiac?
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't tolerate dairy or wheat when I was a child, like when I was a baby. So we're talking like, you know, 1970, and I had to have like rice milk and rice crackers and stuff. I think it was pretty hard to find back then. You had to like special formula and all that.
Impos.
Yeah. I don't have any actual memories of that time.
That's
period,
so weird that you grew
so
out of it.
So I've been told anyway.
Well, we found something new out about Ted Leo.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to move on. Our guest, Rhea Butcher, deserves more than this talk.
That's true. Comedian Rhea Butcher.
Friend, patriot, countryman.
Very funny, very smart, very thoughtful person.
Excellent boot collection.
Really excellent boot collection,
she's
huh?
Got,
I have not seen Rhea's boot collection.
She's got great, you know, there's like a work boot jean. She's got, it's like a really happening, subtle detail of fashion.
Yeah.
Flannel shirty. But very, it's got a flair that
I think
I appreciate.
Rhea and I actually have some adjacent fashion
Agree.
Things. Every now and then our hair sort of grows to the same length and we style it very similarly.
Yeah, but you have to use pomade.
I do have to use pomade, yeah.
And her hair has just got life of its own.
Really?
You know what? I could be wrong. Maybe it seems like she's got very thick, wavy, thick hair. We're spending too much time talking about her.
That's true.
Her style aesthetic. But I'm just saying that it's cool. She's cool, is what I'm saying. Plus, she gave me an awesome pocket knife.
Really?
She did, because we were discussing how I was like a little tomboy kid. I would have killed for a cool... She had like a sort of collection of pocket knives.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, I would have just... When I was a kid, like, this would have been my jam.
Wow.
And she gave me this knife. It was great.
Wow. Do you ever have a butterfly knife?
No, because I'm not murdering people and dissecting their bodies,
right.
Ted.
That was a big thing around here. I just got back from some shows in Canada, in Calgary and Edmonton, where it was very cold. You know, they refer to winter hats as toques.
Oh, really?
Up there, yeah.
Okay, yeah, because it's a French word?
I think so.
T-O-Q-U-E.
Yeah. Don't forget your toque, eh? And the reason I thought about this, mentioning butterfly knives, is because growing up around here in the New York area, in the 70s. It was all like butterfly knives and what we called gubellinis.
Oh my God, I don't know what that is.
It's just like a winter hat, you know, right. Like a dock worker kind of like winter hat. But we always called them gubellinis. And it took me on mic at one of my shows. It took me about 10 minutes of arguing with the audience in Edmonton to convince them that I was not making that up.
Wow.
Yeah.
It sounds like a made up name, but maybe it's like maybe some kid in your neighborhood made it up and then it caught on like wildfire. Well, Rhea is a great comic. I really love her laconic style. It's like, you know, laid back and then boom.
This is our talk with Rhea Butcher. We spoke to her at her place in LA last spring or summer.
And we jumped in. We started recording mid impassioned discussion.
Impassioned discussion about how annoyed we were with the idea warriors of the intellectual dark web, which is why you'll hear a terrible but mercifully brief Jordan Peterson impersonation. And I want to apologize for that. And also for the fact that back when we first started doing these interviews, I just would hit record and figure that we'd just pick up the conversation at some point. That's not the best way to do things. Sometimes it works, but sometimes it just adds to the amount.
Maybe you can figure out what we were talking about. Yeah, maybe exactly. You can't. That's a question mark that this show brings you.
Let's get into it. Rhea Butcher.
She sent me a podcast about like identity in different like areas. It's this highly academic podcast where mm-hmm. I was just listening to it going like, I'm furious like the whole time.
Right.
It was just research, but that's it. It's research by like presumably two straight people because neither of them identified as queer whatsoever.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And which is fine. You can research a group that you're not a part of, but I think you have to like be aware of that then when you're discussing it because we're talking about human beings.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. That's my... You know, I don't know.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Weird.
I mean, that's part of the whole thing about, you know, we're just talking about ideas
just
here. Like, what are we, you know, because
it.
No, like, ideas in a vacuum, first of all, like, there are no ideas in a vacuum.
And also, good for you, because none of your ideas, none of the consequences of your ideas will affect you in the fucking slightest.
Well, that's exactly. That's, the, yeah, you know.
But you know who it will affect? Women.
Other, yeah.
Yeah. Queer people.
Because mm-hmm. you're not thinking about, okay, so part of my job is doing stand-up, so I have to write jokes. And so I have to write material that makes sense and makes people laugh. I also have to think about what I'm saying to people. And I take that very seriously. I'm maybe not always super funny, but I just, it's not like, oh, I don't want to step on any toes. I mean, I certainly don't want to step on oppressed toes whatsoever, but it's more so like, what am I saying and how can this be interpreted and used? Because like I'm saying, I'm not speaking into a vacuum.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah. Like, is that not an important part of discourse anymore? Like it or not anymore, but it just, it's very strange to me that we wouldn't be having these conversations like, look, you're saying these things and perhaps your intention is not this, but they are being used this way. What do you have to say about that? Because if I found out tomorrow somebody was like, well, Rhea Butcher says this about X, Y, and Z, and this is why I think this person shouldn't exist on the planet, I would be like, all right, we need to have a conversation, or I need to address my thought differently.
But your
motive, or I need to stop saying that.
Your motives are different. And I think you're right that, you know, people we were talking about earlier, their motives are fame, provocation. They like stirring the shit. You're well, you don't, you want to create something real.
I'm going to go a step further and say that the very idea that anything can be just academic is ridiculous. I mean, I suppose if somebody does a study and it winds up in a book and it lands on a shelf and nobody ever reads it, it's sort of just academic, but whatever they were studying for those people's lives, it's affecting the way that they think. It's informing the decisions that they make. And these people, these Jordan Petersons and et cetera, you know, they can say all they want that we're just discussing ideas or we're just having a conversation. But what they want out of it is the end result of the way that they think about things, the way that they want to see things. And that is, it's a patriarchy that is more intense than it is already.
Well, more intense than it's ever been. Should we start? I mean, I'm not saying this can't be slotted in, but should we start?
It's a heck of a beginning.
Yeah, some of this I think probably will be slotted in, especially because Rhea.
Hello.
Rhea Butcher, our guest, you began speaking about how this informs your work.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely want to eventually get specifically into how you approach some of the different aspects of the work that you do, because you're not just a stand-up. But let's dive in on stand-up. Let's go a little inside baseball, and so to speak.
That's my favorite.
And
you basically live inside baseball.
Yeah. How often do you rework a set?
Well, I guess the way that I would talk about this, because I think it's maybe more interesting this way, is that when I first started, I had a office job. And so I was at that office job from 8 to 5 every day. And I literally wrote out every word I thought I was going to say in a 3-minute set, because that was like the goal. So there was this series of open mics in Chicago that everybody would hit. And the Wednesday night one was right down the street from my house and also happened to be run by Cameron Esposito. And it was like the best open mic in Chicago. And like it had a audience and it was like kind of like a show. And you got 3 minutes. So once I started going, I would go to this open mic on Monday that was really great, but that was like a little bit more of a comics open mic, which was fun. And then Tuesday would be another sort of comics open mic. And then Wednesday would be the one with an audience with comics too. But I have like very specific print handwriting that I used to be locked into, but we don't write anything anymore. So I like barely write. But I would write out like every word of the set. And so then mostly just the writing of that is how I would memorize it for the open mic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I started doing that. But in terms of like material, it was all very observational. And I was definitely mostly just aping Ellen DeGeneres and like her style of stand up. And then like a little bit of Cameron, because she was right there and I was watching her do it every week before I started. And I listened to a lot of podcasts. And my like entryway into understanding like how to do it was honestly listening to also our friend Paul F. Tompkins's like literally every interview that he did.
Right.
Like I just searched his name and listened to every podcast he was on, which is a lot.
That's a lot.
He's many podcasts.
He's on this one.
He's on this one. And that's an excellent model.
Absolutely. And so like I just listened to him talk about how he got into it. And it was a very accessible way of getting into, because even living in Chicago, I still didn't get like, how do you do this?
What do you think you got from Ellen?
I think specifically from Ellen, like her jokes make so much sense.
Uh-huh.
I want to say the word easy, but that's not, I don't mean they're easy jokes, because we haven't written those jokes.
There's
an ease to them. Right. They're very understandable. Like you don't have to have a lot of information to get them. And it's super observational. And she's not like whiny. It just makes a lot of sense. And then her cadence like makes sense to me in the way. Plus I just was watching her since I was like 6. So her comedy had just been like a part of my life for so long. And I also like how much she uses physical comedy.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not constant, but it's always there. It's very funny and subtle, and it adds to the whole thing. And like Paul is kind of the same thing, but he's more personal. You know, her comedy kind of evolved over the years, and she has like one very personal hour that she did. Then the rest of it is just observational stuff, very universal. But Paul is like observational, very universal, but also highly personal.
Yeah.
And that's what I think really immediately loved about his stand-up, because I saw him in Chicago when he did his Freak Wharf taping.
And I
was just like, holy shit. Like, I just never seen anything like that. Living in Akron, it was like all music, no comedy.
Was there a time where you started to feel that you sensed an internal structure of jokes, or I assume at some point you didn't worry about, you know, having it be a word for word?
Right. The other thing about that is I didn't worry about it being word for word. That was just like, how do I say this?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I couldn't be at my job and say the jokes. It was like a way of saying it like in the mirror or something.
So you like imprint it in your mind and then you'll more or less.
Exactly.
Like you'll have that as a reference.
Here's what it's going to be. And that evolved to like now I just have the bullet points of the things I talk about on a set list, which doesn't always work because I say things and then I forget about it, but I'll like write those extra things in. But like when I go on tour and work on an hour or something like that, now I have the bullet points of the things I want to talk about. And when I say new things, I like write that on the set list. And so I have the set list that's just like written over a million times, but I don't care.
Are there things you say, you know, bits or jokes or whatever that you say that go over and you're not sure why. Like if you phrase it differently one night and it goes over better than another and you're like, I have no idea why they think that's... Do you have those moments or do you know what the difference is?
No, I mean, I definitely have those moments. There's the simple thing of like saying it this way in Lancaster, Pennsylvania goes over a lot better than in Baltimore, Maryland, which is so funny because it's like,
wow,
not that far from each other, but like the frame of reference is slightly different.
Yeah.
So you can't really know until you're standing in front of a group of people, but sometimes you make little references to things in your own life. Because I'm from Ohio, it's not the same.
Yeah,
but then
yeah,
there is the same stuff.
Yeah,
right. Like, oh,
one's a Wawa, one's a Stop and Shop.
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Because I don't understand comedy, but yeah, I'm fascinated by it.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things that I will say on stage. Sometimes it will get a big laugh, yeah, and sometimes it won't. And I'm like, why?
Right.
What did I do differently?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the...
I mean, then I know what I did differently and I repeat it, but I'm not exactly sure why.
Well, it's like a mix though, isn't it? I mean, a music audience is a mix, just like a comedy audience is a mix for music.
Right.
Yeah.
Where like... You have people in the audience that are like high music nerds, and then you have people in the audience that are like music and comedy people.
Yeah.
And I also wonder, like, does it matter? Do you always say it after the same song?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's okay. Introducing the same song every time.
Okay, got it.
Because I want the formula.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
I want to know why it works, and I want to repeat it.
But people don't, you know, different audiences maybe don't know how to react to that kind of cross-pollination sometimes. Like, they might find it funny. They might just not know that they're allowed.
Are we supposed to
like,
laugh?
No, I think
at
I'm doing.
Point,
I think I'm doing something wrong. I think
you're not doing
yeah,
anything wrong.
I think I'm doing.
They think
when
they're
don't
doing
wrong,
something wrong because
right,
they're out
right,
of the house.
Maybe.
Right.
Yeah. Did you sort of note though that there was a point where you started to feel like I'll have an observation, but I know how to structure it now to get the most, get all the comedy juice out
sure,
of it. I'm sorry for that
wow,
phrasing.
You're
it's
going
terrible.
My...
It's a real Ted Leo.
That might need a trigger warning. I think that the benefit that I had to starting doing stand-up at the ripe old age of 28 was, at least at that moment, I wasn't fully figuring out who I was as an adult. Like, obviously still, right, you know, you're figuring things out for the rest of your life of who you are, who you want to be, all those things. But I wasn't like 19 going, I don't know who I am, you know, just like
yeah,
saying things because they make people uncomfortable or whatever. So I had that benefit to feeling pretty comfortable in my own skin. Then saying things had a little bit extra oomph that would make them funny because they were coming from a more fully formed person.
Right. Mm. A more solid and real place.
Yes. Like a real, like I had a point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you could figure it out in like 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Like once I started talking, like, oh, I get this person or I'm going to get them even more. So I had that benefit. But then the thing was I could say things and they would be funny to people. And I'd be like, great, I was funny.
Uh-huh.
And then I didn't realize like, oh, you have to like work on this material. You have to like do it a bunch of times. And I was doing it at this open mic that was like a show. So it felt like a show. So I was like, I can't do it again.
Right.
But
right,
then I learned like, oh, you just have to do it again. You have to move it around, put it in other things. You've got a new observation and it relates to that thing. Just say it again. There's going to be new people. Like you just,
yeah,
you get over the feeling of like, oh, I have to be fresh and new. And that's what's exciting about it. Like that's really only exciting to you, you know, and if you want to do it, you have to just do this over and over and over again.
Mm.
To me, that's really interesting,
mm-hmm,
you know, that you're like, yeah, I have to practice.
Yeah.
I can't just do it once. It's not just going to be one flash of this great, amazing thing. And then it's shooting star.
Right.
It's like, now it's gone.
Along those lines, I think that with being a musician, you know, I think both on the writing side and on the playing side, you know, the great free jazz performers, they didn't walk into a room cold and just start yeah, making noise. You know,
right,
they learned a form. They were able to take off into the stratosphere from a solid grounding. And
mm-hmm,
I find that the longer a tour goes on, for example, the more interesting things I can do because as I get more muscle memory with this set of songs, I don't have to spend as much of my brain focusing on that most basic structure of it. And I imagine it's probably similar to doing comedy.
Yeah, just having jokes and sort of, okay, this is how you're on stage. This is how this works. This is how I hold the microphone. This is how I put the stand back there. This is where I should be on the stage.
Right.
Like those really basic things. And then once you get comfortable with that, it's almost taking like more of a risk to repeat those things and take the risk of saying something to somebody you've already said. And also you have to like practice failing. Because if you don't fail, this is just like a comedy thing, which is like, if you've never bombed, then you're going to. So like you can't go 20 years without bombing, because then you're going to bomb really hard.
Right.
You know, like you have to like not get it out of the way, but like you have to start doing it. Because if you don't ever do it, then you don't know how to recover from it.
Yeah.
And you're just like sailing along at this weird pace.
Yeah.
And in that sort of thing, if somebody is listening that wants to do stand up, something that I learned that like put me in my place and like made a lot of sense to me was one time I went to one of those open mics and like felt like I had a weird set. And then I like tweeted about it, which don't ever do that. But this was like, you know, 2011. So it was like slightly different. I didn't, you know, I had like 400 followers
right.
or something like that. But it's also silly. Like, don't tweet about sets. That's gross. It's weird. I learned that also. Like, I'm not going to tweet about comedy other than promoting where I'm going to be. That's it. I tweeted, oh, I just bombed, whatever. And this senior comic to me was like, shut the fuck up. There's no such thing as bombing at open mics. You did jokes and then you went home. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, like,
yeah,
it's not, it's super important, but it's also not important. And also like, you just got to do this thing and then get through the other side.
Mm.
Yeah. One of the things that I practice, like I literally practice on stage and in life, is when I make a mistake, just go let it go.
Oh, yeah.
Let it go. It's over.
Mm-hmm. It's already so gone.
It's gone. You can't control what people, did people hear it? Did they pay attention to it?
Probably
not. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Can't do anything about it. Move on.
There was this kid in eighth grade. There was like some talent show and I barely knew the people I went to school with in eighth grade. And that's a story for a different podcast. he was playing something.
That could
on
be
acoustic.
Our Catholic school podcast.
Exactly. Yes, let's do that. He was playing something on acoustic guitar and he kept messing up and he would go, gah! Gah! Like on stage. And I was like, oh man, I never want to do that.
Do not even say it. I know what you're thinking. Don't even say it.
Oh my God. I wasn't thinking about you.
Well.
I actually was thinking about a show I saw, Elvis Costello, doing an acoustic show, which was so great. And he played the wrong chord and he just kept going. And I remember going, yeah, just fucking keep going.
Going.
Like, what was he going to do? Stop the song and go, oops.
Yeah.
Like, just keep going. Who gives a shit? It was great. And I mean, it showed a lot of confidence because it was like, I don't care.
There's a way to do an oops that still shows that. You know what I mean? Like,
Having said that, I will stop a show.
Right.
I will stop a show and start the song over. It depends on how egregious the mistake is. But that's also just part of the fun. I mean,
totally.
I do that because it's fun.
Yeah.
There's an in-group way to be like, boo.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get back to the show in a minute, but now is the time where we have to talk to you about the Max Fun Pledge Drive.
This is our first Max Fun Pledge Drive. Is that what it's called? A Pledge Drive?
It's called a Pledge Drive, yeah.
Okay.
It goes on for a couple of weeks, apparently. So this is all new information to us as well.
I've never done it before. It's exciting.
And basically, what you are listening to this show on is a podcast network, and the podcast network requires money to operate. It's listener-supported.
There are some sponsors, but it's not as much as you think. So most of it is donations, which is kind of cool. I like the idea of being supported by the many. It's like crowd surfing. The many helping hands.
The many groping
the
hands.
The many groping help. But also helpful hands, keeping us aloft, keeping our podcast aloft, as if I ever crowd surfed in my life. Imagine, if you will, me crowd surfing. Why should you be a member? Because your contribution directly supports our show. And we are here to educate and entertain. We're here to edutain.
Mm-hmm.
We're
BDP.
You know, hopefully we bring a little fun thing to your life and it is a way of directly supporting us. If you like us, hopefully you like us because you're listening to us. We really want to have a good, like bring you a good in place of a stress that comes from scrolling through Twitter. That's the choice that we'd like you to make. To listen to people talk about creating stuff and making stuff and doing stuff.
And we need your help to keep doing it. In addition to our show, there are so many other great shows on the Maximum Fun Network. You get bonus content from them all when you become a member. There are a number of different levels you can donate at. You can start at $5.
From like $5 a month to $200 a month, like anything in between.
Mm-hmm.
There's awesome thank you gifts that are at MaximumFun.org/donate. We'll talk about more about that later. There's a whole list of stuff.
Let's lean on the bonus content for right now. You don't get that if you don't become a member.
Yeah, all of the shows are doing bonus content, like, you know, special episodes and cool stuff.
Here's what you get from us. Check this out. As you know, Amy and I are not just podcast co-hosts. We also have a band together. Band hasn't been particularly active lately, but we do have a few things that were never released. You're going to get a quality piece of music written by myself and Amy Mann just for becoming a member today at MaximumFun.org/donate.
Which is funny because I thought it was a song that we did release, and then Ted reminded me that, like, nope, we never did.
Yeah.
So now it can be heard, but only by you.
But, you know, in the future, if this keeps going on, most people do, you know, more bonus podcasty kind of stuff. We're actually still attempting to be active musicians at the same time as doing this, so our schedules don't really permit us to do an extra episode right now, but I think it's kind of cool that we get to offer you some actual musical content, so that's going to be our bonus. We're shooting to get 25,000 new members this pledge go around, so if you're already a member and you're happy with everything you're getting, just tell a bunch of other people how happy you are so we can get 25,000 more to sign up during this pledge period.
Here's what it comes down to. We are new to Maximum Fun, and we need you to make us look good by becoming a member and then saying it's because of us. It's really just a naked plea for acceptance and approval.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, we count on listener support, and our message is, if you love us, you will prove your love.
That's right. That's right. Listen, we all know, if you're a regular listener to Max Fun podcast, we all know you like, you know, Hal Lubin and
Mark Gagliardi, and
We Got This. You know, we know you like the Jackie and Laurie show. We're new. We're the new kids on the block. They all look down their noses at us. Their podcasting noses, their comedy noses.
We're the underdogs.
We're the underdogs. You got to make us look good to all these big podcast wigs. John Hodgman, come on.
I know. He's got it made. He's already established. But also, you know, if you support us, you support him, support the whole thing.
That's true.
$10 a month, $35 a month, other bucks a month, whatever feels right, whatever feels good. And to the current members, we really want to thank you for your support.
If you're a current Maximum Fun member, that means you were probably a member before you discovered our show. So if you're listening to our show, we want to thank you for that as well, for welcoming us to the Max Fun family.
You know, you really do make this possible, and I feel very grateful to have this opportunity to make a podcast. It's been really rewarding. I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, think about this. How we got started with this was just actually going out and talking to people and recording interviews. We had no idea where this podcast was going to live. We had no idea if it would ever even actually become a podcast. Enter Max Fun. They helped us wrangle our ideas into a presentable form and deliver it to you. And we could not have done it without them. So once again, support us, support them, get a gift, either join or upgrade your membership if you already are, maybe.
Yeah, if you're currently a member, thank you so much. And if you want to up the ante, you can help us reach our goal of 25,000 new or upgrading members.
Well, that's interesting. So new or upgrading members. I'm going to amend that for our purposes to just new.
Yeah.
You know what?
For us, it's new.
I'm not saying don't upgrade, but I'm saying how great would it be to, in addition to upgrades, to get 25,000 new?
That would be unbelievable.
Right.
And once again, all the pledge gifts are listed at MaximumFun.org/donate.
The gifts are really great. And to do them justice, we're going to save an explanation of them for the next break. But if you want to join now, as we go back to our interview with Rhea Butcher, once again, it's MaximumFun.org/donate.
Well, let's talk about the writing a little bit. I am really curious with your wonderful show, Take My Wife.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You and Cam were both pretty active. I mean, I'm obviously during your writing and filming seasons, you weren't out on the road doing comedy, but you jumped around a lot.
We did. The first season we did, because we didn't know what we were doing.
Right.
We were like, oh, crazy. We shouldn't have been doing this.
Right.
But nobody told us we shouldn't, so we just did.
Well, what was the... had you written for a scripted show before
at
all?
Nope, not at all.
Right.
I hadn't even written like a sketch.
Wow.
I had never opened Final Draft.
Wow.
No, not at all. Not one bit.
I don't even have a specific question. I just need to know. Because writing a a script or something, I can't even imagine. So I am interested in what happened.
Well, we hired a really incredibly talented head writer, Shauna McGarry, who is just her understanding not only of the format of television, but also the emotion of television, how her understanding of story and how it fits all of those things is just tremendous. And so if it wasn't for her, it also the other writing staff, which was we had two additional writers and a writer's assistant. So luckily the thing is, you don't technically write the script per se, and I didn't have to learn formatting day one or anything, but I definitely had to run very quickly alongside other people going how does this work, kind of a thing.
So what would be the process?
To write the show? How did we write the show?
How did you do it?
The nutso thing about our show is that we wrote it in we developed it and wrote it. That is to say, we outlined a season of television, which was only 6 episodes at 22 minutes per episode, but this is still a lot of information.
Yeah.
In 6 weeks, which typically, let's say a television show, just pulling these numbers out of my butt, 10 episodes gets 12 weeks to write and develop it.
Does not seem like a lot.
Yeah, even that doesn't seem like a lot. Yeah. So we did the work of that in 4 weeks with half of a staff that you would typically have probably 8 people for that room.
So how do you start? Do you start with an outline, a basic story?
What we did was, everybody came to our stand-up show, so they saw us doing stand-up together, and then we told stories for 2 days about our experience moving here, because that's we set up the time frame that we wanted it to be. We told those stories, people took notes, then our head writer was like, all right, this is how I see us getting from point A to point B. Do you guys like point A? Do you like point B? And we were like, yes. Wow. And then we figured out those other points, what is the journey that they're on together? Right. What is the journey that Cameron is on? What is the journey that Rhea is on? And so we figured out our A story, our B story, and our C story, and then figured out additional people for them to interact with. How do they fit into the world? And then that just is the formula that we used for the whole thing to make sense.
See, I mean, I know this is very inside baseball. Once again, baseball is your thing. But this is, it's just
inside baseball.
It's so fascinating to me that you put your personal stories and
your
people you know and characters you know and things that happen to you, and you can dress this skeleton with your personal emotional things, and it works and it holds up it makes a complete creature, and that's so fascinating.
This is one of the things that across the board, across art forms, across different personal experiences, that I think is becoming clear that I don't know that I would have been able to articulate, before we started talking to people about this, which is that there are these forms, and we all want to be the people who don't need the forms. We all want to be people
who just instinctively can
perpetually
do.
Riding that bolt of lightning, wherever you want to be.
But
wherever
I mean, the fun thing is you can take the bolt of lightning and go, what is this bolt of lightning?
Yeah.
And then you go, okay, I'll take the bolt of lightning and I'll wrap it around this thing.
Yeah. Or what I was going to say is that these forms are actually vessels that help you build a skeleton that you then imbue with the soul of the project.
Yeah.
Sure. It's you animate it with the soul. It's not like it's just a science project.
Right. My art professors I had a painting professor that I have a very distinct memory of him saying, don't fall in love with the process. Mm. And I was like, fuck you, I love the process. Right. And now I understand now I get what he means. The process doesn't matter. If you want to make commentary about the process, then make commentary about the process. But you have to make the commentary about the process. You still have to have the end result. It can't just be look at this journey I took.
Right.
It has to actually be, which is what social media is for, why it's not, it can't ever really truly be its own art form, because it's a journey, it's a journal and a journey.
Mm-hmm.
So streaming networks like ours and other ones I've learned recently, that they're just kind of like, you can do whatever.
Right.
You don't have to have a three-act structure. And people are so like, get rid of the three-act structure. And like, everybody else is going like, but it works.
Yeah. It works.
And that's,
and
it works, to write around, yeah, and it works for people to watch.
Because
it's not, we're not making a movie. It has a very long, you know, you have a season of television. If you expect people to watch 10 hours of something, they need to have a ride.
Yeah.
And they can't be, you can't just be on the same path, mm-hmm, for,
yeah,
that long. Like, you need a bunch of acts together.
Right,
that
right,
it can't just,
right,
it can't just be random. You, yeah, have to, you have to understand that there's arcs to everything. You know, I mean, like when you said ride, I was just thinking of literally being in, on rides in Disneyland, and you know, you get a, you get in every ride in Disneyland, you get,
oh,
it,
yeah,
you get in
it
the little
three
boat,
act structure,
boat, right, or whatever, right, and it's like da da da. You're introduced to the characters, like, oh, there's a, something's gonna happen, like, oh, there's a conflict, like, oh, there's a real peak that's being, yeah, now we're going, right, down a hill, like. It really does.
Yeah.
It's a three-act structure. It's, yeah, crazy.
It would be a crummy ride if it either just went on a flat track at the pace that you leave the,
yeah,
roller,
yeah,
coaster boarding platform from, or if it was just immediately a loop. You're just looping, 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 yeah, looping, and then
a
you're
giant,
off, yeah,
a giant hill, and then like weirdly flat,
yeah,
towards, yeah, the middle and the end.
Right.
Like, what? No,
it's,
I
like
don't need
those,
that much cool down.
The rotor. Like, you're thinking of the rotor.
Yeah. Well, I'm not, but,
oh, okay.
I know what you mean. Right. I mean, the rotor is the three-act structure of that is, when do you get your legs up under you? But I'm thinking of the ride that has like a bunch of different names. I think the last time I rode it, it was called like the Music Express or something. It looks like a roller coaster, but it just rides on a circular track.
Oh, yeah.
And like,
the,
if
Alpine,
you sit, yeah, like it just spins, yeah, around, and it's like a rotor.
The,
but
Himalaya.
A,
yeah,
and
Himalaya.
You're like, oh, this looks fun. And then you get on it, you're like, this is the nightmare. Because it doesn't do any. There's
doesn't
maybe
do
like two tiny hills.
Yeah.
But you're just like, oh, this is just.
You need the DJ in the booth who's going, do you want to go faster?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I want to get off this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, inspiration is real, and we don't know everything. So there are other,
yeah,
forms to come. You know, there are other,
right,
forms to come down the pike. But at the same time, the soul does need a vessel. And,
yes.
And,
yeah,
there are working forms that we can use.
And to continue, yeah, your Frankensteinian metaphor.
Frankenstein's Monsterinian.
Yeah. But,
oh, boy.
You know, we, you have the skeleton.
Actually, Amy.
Don't.
He's very misunderstood.
So nerds.
Frankenstein's monster.
You have the skeleton, but we supply the flesh.
Yeah.
And then there is that bolt of lightning that comes and animates it in some way. And, you know, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
If you're lucky, you're not just walking around with a like a weird flesh skeleton, like that it actually turns into a, you know, some kind of living thing.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
We got weird and deep.
Sometimes I do feel like I'm just walking around with a weird flesh skeleton.
We're back to talk to you a little bit more about the Maximum Fun Pledge Drive. And as promised, let me go through some of the gifts right now. Once again, $5 monthly membership. You get access to over 100 hours of bonus episodes and the extra song that we're going to offer this year around. For $10 a month, you get to choose an enamel pin. Every single show on Max Fun has a special one. Listen, we know, because you're listening to us, we know which one you're going to choose, right? We have a very cool pin.
Obviously, it's our new cool pin.
Yeah. Designed by Megan Lynn Cott. It's really cool. It's a squiggly horn.
It's a squiggly horn.
Yeah. Twists and turns that the air
it's
takes
the,
from the squeezy thing to the end of the horn
to, the horn,
to make a noise.
Horn part. It's,
yeah,
it's a demonstration of the art of process.
That's right.
You put in a squeezy thing, honk sound. It
you
goes
honk
through
a squeezy thing.
Goes through a twisty tube, and then it comes out the other end. I feel like it's a perfect description of our podcast.
It's pretty much how it works out. For $20, you get a beautiful 550-piece Maximum Fun puzzle designed by Jeffrey Tice, specifically for Max Fun monthly members. Now, Max Fun will tell you it's the perfect activity to go along with listening to podcasts. I'm going to tell you, I'm not the hugest Jigsaw fan, but you know who is?
Me.
Amy Mann.
I love Jigsaw puzzles because it is relaxing, because it takes very little brain power, but it does take a small amount of brain power. Enough brain power is the part of your brain that would normally obsess about things. You can obsess about where is that goddamn piece that looks like a weird guy with long arms.
I think that's maybe my problem with the puzzles is that I can't relax. That doesn't relax me. I think it actually stresses me out more. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I need to dig into this a little bit.
That's crazy.
I think I like a game activity that takes more of my brain power.
Yeah, I understand that. It's why I used to like boxing. It was like you had to involve every part of your brain and, you know, you couldn't afford to relax in any way.
Right.
But
here's the thing.
You didn't have a chance to get anxious about stuff.
That's exactly right. You push the anxiety out by using your entire brain to focus.
I mean, when you're anxious
else.
About getting punched in the face, that you're a lot less anxious about other more arcane things.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah. It's amazing what a good clock to the jaw can do for just clearing the old brain. It crystallizes a lot for you. For $35 a month, you get a coffee mug engraved with the Maximum Fun Rocket logo. Guess what? You don't have to put coffee in it. I don't drink a lot of coffee.
Put tea in it.
Yeah, I drink almost no coffee. I would still use that mug.
I drink matcha tea now.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How's it working for you?
Well, it's good because it's got some extra thing in it, so it doesn't make me like super crazy wired.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, nobody's interested in that.
I'm interested.
My dietary choices.
I like an Egyptian licorice mint. That's
I've
kind of
had
my new
that
joint.
And it's kind of weird, but...
You're kind of weird. What do we get for $50? We get a metal engraved Maximum Fun membership card personalized with your name. You throw that down on a counter. You can't pay for anything with it, but it's really impressive.
It clangs.
Yeah.
It's made of metal. My God, that's cool.
And they know, that you listen to good podcasts.
They know that you gave money to listen to good podcasts because you care.
Yeah, maybe you're not throwing it down to pay. You're throwing it down to prove that you paid.
Yeah, to prove that you care and that you're cool.
That's right. $100 a month, you get a membership in the Inner Circle, the monthly culture club of Maximum Fun. I have no idea what that entails.
Once again, we're
new to this, but it sounds cool.
It sounds cool.
Maybe they'll let us in at some point. I hope there's a handshake and some regalia. God.
I hope there's a handshake and like a hat with a plume. Probably not. I'm not promising you a hat with a plume.
Oh.
Although if you came over to our house, you would see my husband's collections
of hats with plumes.
Now,
I thought you said cat with a plume.
I would like to see a cat with a plume.
Right? How about a cat with a hat with a plume? For $200 a month, you get free registration to the next Max Fun Con, which takes place in 2020. Con meaning convention, not con. Yeah, not con job.
Not con game.
Nobody's trying to con you here.
Go to MaximumFun.org/donate. You will see a grid of membership levels for you to choose from. And you'll give you credit card information with some other basic information. And then you are done. That is all it takes. That sounds pretty easy.
It's pretty easy. You can do it right now if you're sitting in front of your computer or on your phone, looking at your phone. If you're driving and listening to this and your phone to... Instruct somebody else to pick up your phone.
Yeah, do it now.
And do it for you.
Yeah, do it now so you don't forget.
Yeah, do it so you don't forget.
Because I often forget stuff like that. And
do it so you
I
don't
feel bad
forget.
About it. And when they ask you about your listener habits, select this show, The Art of Process.
Yes, remember, we like that you like a lot of shows. We know that this is not the only podcast you listen to, but we hope that, once again, our very naked plea for you to support.
Naked plea for approval.
Not just Maximum Fun, but this show in particular. Will lead you to click that you like this show in particular. That would be very nice and affirming for us.
Your contribution will process automatically each month, and it renews automatically each year. You don't have to do anything else unless you want to cancel or unless your credit card information changes. So I don't know. If you've ever considered becoming a Max Fun member to support us or other shows, now is the time to do it.
Let's talk a little bit about the present moment. Let's talk about working in the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that one would be making art of any kind sometimes seems crazy. Other times it seems like the most sane thing and the most necessary thing. But it's not impossible to continue work that has already been set in motion. But I find it hard sometimes to begin new work.
Oh, yeah. I mean... It's hard to be here in my house and like start something new. I mean, I have a history of, I'm really good at starting something, but finishing it, you know, it's a classic third act is always difficult for me in terms of working. But now, like just trying to get something started on my own, like sit and conjure something, it's so easy to be distracted mm-hmm. on so many levels, superficial ones where like there's just the access to entertainment at any moment is just,
it's the worst.
It's everywhere. So that's difficult. And then just the weight of everything that's going on and then realizing it was always going on. Like yeah, you're just like yeah. having this like realization constantly every day. So going on tour and going out and trying to work on things very externally, I've found is like kind of the only way that I can do it. And if I'm not going on tour or something like that, I try to go out into the world and like, I don't know, take photographs or do something completely out of, it has nothing, I'm not going to take those photographs and then like, you know, put them in a script or something. Like they're just to be out in the world and observe things and just yeah. be a person that exists in the world sometimes, because then I can at least like let my mind wander into a space that's free of those things for 20 minutes or something, and just using some other sort of form to escape that.
Right.
Not you, because working and creation were sometimes like escapes from work, because work was what was difficult because I had like a mind numbing job or whatever. And so now that's not really the case. So it's like I have to get away from the awful shit with right. creativity right. that's creativity for creativity's sake.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's more about removing barriers to creativity.
Yes.
And the barriers are, you know, just like the depression of yeah. living in the, yeah. in the political climate.
And the expectation, like you guys were talking about, we were all talking about the expectation of something being like first draft perfect, you know, like,
yeah.
cause like that can also, I found when I'm, you know, sliding more towards a depression or something like that, that hits even harder.
Yeah.
I do it all the time. Like you think everything's going to be perfect the first try.
Yeah.
And then you have to like just force yourself to practice or make revisions or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then, but then when I'm sadder or whatever, I'm like, I just have to come up with the right movie idea. And then yeah. it's like, that's literally never going to happen. Cause you probably, even if you did come up with it, somebody's probably already come up with it, you know?
Yeah. I think, you know, part of that problem is when you're depressed, you're hoping for like a shot of some kind of grandiosity to get you out of it. So only the, you know, this brilliant idea can get you out of it. You know, and I realize like I have to set my goals really, really modestly.
Oh, yeah.
So that I can feel like I have a win, you know, like check mark on the day. But that has to be really, expectations really low, because mm-hmm. otherwise it's easy to get into that, you know, I failed today.
Sure.
I feel like we're just warming up into this pledge pitching thing and that we're going to get a lot better at it. But there's a lot going on right now. And we know that that's the case with you, the listener, as well.
Look, you're like us. You got a lot of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear this thing and you're like, I'll do it later.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just do it now.
Do it now. And if you can, do it at a $10 level, get a pin. Do it at a $35 level, get the mug. In the last break, I mentioned that I didn't know what the inner circle was all about. We imagined it as some arcane...
An actual circle?
You know, like Rosicrucian, you know, you have actual circle. You stand around, chant, do some chants led by Jesse Thorne, you know?
Jesse Thorne chanting.
But I did a little research while we were back listening to Rhea Butcher, and I found out that if you pledge $100 and join the Inner Circle, every month you get a note detailing a book, album, or other piece of culture. That's why they call it a
wow.
culture club.
Oh, that's nice.
And, you know, so it gets talked about, and it's chosen by a show. Maybe they'll ask us to do that at some
point. That's really
right?
nice.
We have recommendations. We got recs. And then you get a download code or a physical copy of that recommendation.
That's kind
so
of awesome.
So that's pretty good.
Honestly,
that adds up over the years.
That's pretty
so,
cool.
You know, for $100 a month, you do a lot to support the network, to support our show, and you get all that extra stuff, music, books, whatever it is. And in the final analysis, you're probably getting a lot more than $100 worth of extra content there.
That's very cool. So please help us reach our goal of 25,000 new or upgrading members by joining right now. If you're in front of a computer, take a moment. That's easy. Do it right now. If you're on a treadmill or in a car,
mm-hmm.
make a plan for when you get home.
Yeah. Don't slip on the treadmill.
Don't slip
trip on,
the
treadmill.
Yeah. You can
don't
finish,
sweat on your phone.
We'll allow you to finish your workout.
Yeah. Finish your workout. Towel off.
Towel off. Towel off. Rub down. Get your alcohol rubbed down. Get your Swedish massage.
Boy.
Have a Russian guy beat you with twigs.
If you're lucky, you're at a gym like the one that I sometimes go to, which really still has that old Jack LaLanne, you know, men's health club kind of 70s vibe where there's just like...
I love it.
Old Navy vets, like... just naked and shaving and chatting in the locker room, and I'm just
strolling around and all together.
Exactly, yeah. with hearty New England accents.
Oh my god!
Hey, Bob, you heard about this podcast thing? So once again, here's how you become a member. Go to maximumfun.org/donate. Select the membership level that works for you. You put your credit card and some basic information in so that, you know, they can email you your stuff or mail you your stuff, and then you become a member. Your contribution is ongoing, and it'll process automatically each month. You don't have to do anything else. You get the bonus content, and if you pledge at any higher level, you get the great gifts that we've been talking about. I'm pretty psyched that we're going to be able to offer this song that's been sitting around for a while, because it's something I really liked. It was something I started working on.
Agreed.
And I was going to have it on my album, but then we wound up writing it together, and it fell in this awkward time. And we were still touring on our album. We played it live, but we never did anything with it. Now we're going to do something with it. Become a member now, $5 a month, and you get access to that.
Now it's for you, for being a nice person who becomes a member to support our podcast.
I wonder if there's anybody out there who has come to our podcast not knowing that we're musicians. You know what I mean?
Like, I don't know.
Is there anybody who came to our podcast because somebody said, hey, you should check out this podcast, and then they were like, oh, I like this podcast.
Who are these two dumbs? Yeah, they said. What's the deal with those two dumbs?
Assuming that for most listeners of this podcast, that's not the case. I hope that getting an extra song from the two of us is worth becoming a member now.
In conclusion, your contribution directly supports our show, The Art of Process. And here's the thing about our show. We are really interested in how and why creative people do what they do, the steps they take, the methods they have, the forms and structures they use, because we think that it creates a kind of alchemy to have this methodology and underlying structures that end up creating art and magic. And we think there's something that's important in that, almost now more than ever.
I agree. And I also think it's been very nice for me as co-host here to be able to hear other people's stories, you know, hear other people's origin stories, hear other people's work stories, hear other people's thoughts on why they do what they do, not just how they do it. Because really, our process conversation is just a jumping off point. Every single one of these interviews has gone into a lot of other places, just really detailing how people remain creative and why through usually some hard times in their lives.
Yeah. And we really, you know, we really do pour our hearts into this show and give it away for free. And this is your chance to support it if you so choose. And, you know, we're really grateful for your contributions and your support and your patronage.
Yes.
So thank you.
Thank you. Become a member now, maximumfun.org/donate. Back to the show. I think that you, Rhea, like me, also a certain amount of our audience generally knows what they're getting politically and,
yes.
You know, et cetera, and is there for, honestly, like some kind of community catharsis sometimes,
yeah.
You know? And so I always eschew the idea that quote unquote preaching to the choir is always negative, you know, because we actually really need to reinforce each other, you know, sometimes. But the mechanics of actually getting up on stage and playing a song or doing a set, even when you know that that's the case, can still be really daunting, especially if you are feeling depressed. Just the distractions of the news cycle, let alone the crushing depression of it, it's a legitimate impediment to me sometimes. I don't know if it is to either.
Well,
of you,
yeah. I mean, I feel like it's designed that way.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that one thing that I've started to do is I've seen the patterns. Like, I can see the thing happening now more than I could see it, because it's all just advertising. Because advertising is propaganda.
Yeah, that's right.
It's all just like, it's completely cycled back around again. And like, everything is just based on this belief system that like, oh, now we know how to write headlines that will bait you into being angry about them. And you will, you know, retweet them out to your followers. And then people maybe won't click on them, but our headline will be around everywhere. And I'm just like, I'm not gonna participate in this thing anymore. And the preaching to the choir thing, I completely agree with you, Ted. And sometimes I get in a trap of like, is this doing anything? But it is what you're saying, like the catharsis of even just like-minded people being in a room for 2 hours.
Yeah.
I value the idea that we're in bubbles. But the typical people that are being pointed at to say you're in a bubble is left-minded people. And it's like, yes, there are those bubbles, but like...
There are other
also,
bubbles.
There are other bubbles. And there are you're not actually looking at a holistic reason for the bubble.
Right.
Because
right.
some of That's the right. bubbles are, yeah, you need to get out of this track. You should probably read some other stuff. Maybe don't get off the internet for a little while. We all should. You know, like all these things. But I mean, like, why would the people that come to your show, why would the people that come to my show all want to be in that bubble together? Because it's a place that they know that they're going to laugh at stuff and maybe be challenged on occasion by certain things on a certain axis, but not be screamed at, yelled at, told to go away, yeah. said that they're unimportant,
yeah.
discriminated against, feel unsafe. Like, these are things that people like to laugh about, but like, you can laugh about it because it's never happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
like, yeah, all these things are important. I mean, I cannot tell you how many people on this last tour that I was on were saying like, I can't believe this many queer people are here right now. And it's not because they live these super isolated lives or anything, but like, it just doesn't happen that much.
Right.
Like, gay bars are going away or maybe coming back. Who knows? But like, just being in a room where everybody's like laughing and feeling safe enough to laugh together is like a really powerful time.
Yeah. And I think it's important to feel safe. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing about preaching is, I mean, people go to church every Sunday. They don't just go once, and it's and the church is not filled with like sinners who are there for the first time,
that's really,
you know, just like
true.
Straggling out of their gambling dens or whatever,
yeah.
you know, they go to be reassured and to be reminded. And I think that there is a value in coming to see people do stuff that they care about,
mm-hmm.
because to be exposed to caring is important. And it doesn't matter what it's care. You know, you
Preach.
Care about structuring a joke, and we care about structuring a song, and we care about performing. You know, you care about performing and connecting with an audience. That's important, because if you care about that, then you can care about other things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why people feel this. I mean, I do know why people feel the need to shit on the idea of caring. Like, that's there's like two people in the world. There's people who want to care about things, and people who don't think caring is valuable, you know?
They don't think it's cool.
Because I think a lot about how somebody said, like, well, the world is cruel. It's a cruel world. Yes. Does it need to be?
Some of it.
Right,
Could
sure.
we
Some of it
work
and,
on changing
also,
it?
Yeah.
You know?
So fucking
and I
what? Yeah, is that the...
The world, the world is random. Humans yeah. are cruel, and
right.
humans don't have to be cruel.
Yeah,
you know?
We have
yeah.
the option.
Yeah.
And we're choosing.
We have the option.
Right.
We
yeah.
do have the option.
Yeah. We don't have to kill something because it's moving and we have to eat the calories to keep our body moving.
Right.
Like, we don't have to,
yeah.
we can make different, we can choose to do whatever we want.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Choices.
Well, this is great. Thank you.
Oh yeah. Thanks
Thank
for having
so
Thank
much.
You so much. This
yeah.
is really,
I mean, I could talk about this forever.
We could too, as we've
yeah.
learned,
no.
As we've learned in my attempts to edit.
I'm sure. yeah.
Sometimes when a period actually ends a sentence, it's good to, you know, accept the period.
Yeah.
Bria Butcher, thank you so much.
That's all for this episode. Thank you to Rhea Butcher, and thank you for listening.
This is The Art of Process. I'm Amy Mann.
And I'm Ted Leo.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.